All right, so life in the kingdom. That is Jesus' invitation to anyone who has ears to hear and eyes to see. That he wants to invite us to have this life that continually gets turned upside down from what we know as the status quo. But it's a life that's really turned right side up to experience more and more of the fullness of what it looks like when God's kingdom is reigning. As Jesus said, when it is, and his prayer is, that God's will would be done on earth as it is in heaven. And so this life in the kingdom vision that he puts forth in Matthew chapters 5 through 7 is this beautiful picture that he's painting for us of the kind of life that is truly possible when God is reigning in us and through us. And that's a journey, it's a process, but it's an incredible picture that Jesus paints, that as we surrender ourselves more and more, the kind of life that he talks about is the life that we can experience, the kind of victory that he speaks of is possible in him. And so we're looking at it. We're digging into some of the nitty-gritty challenges that we all face in everyday life. And Jesus is talking about these things. He's bringing them up because he wants to show us that in Jesus, in following him, in being born again, in having the Spirit of God dwell in us and upon us, that there is a victory that is impossible without him. He talks right now in this section, he talks about the victory over anger, the victory over broken relationships, victory over lust, victory over divorce, victory over lying and deception. And these, we're just getting started. But these are, if you think about it, man, Jesus is a pretty wise guy. He knows where our battle is, doesn't he? He knows where we fight every day. All those broken relationships that are just messed up with anger. All the deception that we live in that breaks things down. All the lust of our heart, the lust of our eyes. Oh, wow, Jesus is just going right after it. He's going bold style to say, hey, I want you to know that you can be set free. You can live in victory through me. But one thing you have to know before we get going is Jesus does not get into this section. He does not start with this section. And I'm glad he didn't. Because if he did, we would take it on. We would put it on our back as all these rules and commands that we've got to do on our own strength. And we would just walk around with heavy burdens. Oh, I'm not doing this good enough. Oh, I'm not doing not good enough. Oh, I'm failing in lust. I'm failing in anger. I'm failing in deception. But he doesn't start there. He starts, and I just want you guys to see here, there's a very intentional flow, I believe, in the heart of Jesus as he presents this. And especially if you're new, just to see that here in the Sermon on the Mount. He starts with teaching us how to soak in our identity with God, in those things that God does on our behalf that are not deserved. Talks about blessed are the poor in spirit, where God just wants to pour out the kingdom of God in our lives when we say what? When we know we don't have it together. He talks about being the peacemaker because that's what God's done with us. He talks about showing mercy because that's what God's done with us. And all these things, it's about what God has done in us, wants to do in us, and has done for us. The incredible mercy, the incredible peace that he went to reconcile us on the cross, and all of these things that give us that undeserved righteousness. And as we soak in those things, the reality of who God is, and who we are in God's eyes, what happens then is that we get pointed towards a destiny. And that destiny, Jesus said, was to have a righteousness that's beyond the Pharisees. A right living with God and others that's even beyond the Pharisees. And he's not joking. He's saying, and that's where he gets into all these nitty-gritties, that there is a transformation of your life, of your heart, that you can live in incredible victory. But it's not by taking it on your shoulders as all these laws. It's by learning that this is God's heart and knowing it's an invitation to walk with him, but through soaking in the face of God. Seeing God more for who he is and who you are in God's eyes will transform you to walk in this incredible new life. So So we have to have that. And as we talk today, and all these nitty-gritties, I'm going to point us back and say, hey, let's remember to soak in our identity in this one. So that it's not we leave here feeling we have to strive in our own strength to make this happen. You don't. It's an invitation from God that happens through learning to rest in who God is, that then, by the Holy Spirit's power, gives you the strength to new life. Does that make sense? That's a whole different way of living, and that's the one Jesus is inviting us to. It's restful power. All right, so today, we are moving on into the next section here, as he says, or the next topic, if you will. Jesus said in Matthew 5, 38, "You have heard it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the evil person. But if anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other one also. If anyone wants to sue you and take your coat, give your tunic as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go also the second mile. Give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse one who would borrow from you." All right, how many people, this is your favorite verse? How many of you ignore this verse? Okay, this is a tough text. It turns a lot of people off. And I might venture to say, not trying to be sexist, but maybe especially men, who this makes you feel a little bit weak. Don't resist them. You know, is to be a Christian mean it's a call to just be passive? Avoid confrontation? You know, for those who follow it strictly in all situations, I'm a Christian, so yes, so you can walk all over me and I won't do anything. To the point of even I could be abused and in the name of the Lord, I won't resist. What does this mean? What is going on here? If we look at the life of Jesus, first of all, always important to see the context, to see what Jesus does in the arc of his life, and does a weak and passive and non-confrontational, lay down and just whatever you want to do, whatever kind of evil, just with no resistance whatsoever, bring it on. Did Jesus live that kind of life? Not at all. I mean, was he passive when he walked into the temple and he saw the merchants cheating the poor and he made a whip and scared everybody so much by throwing over the tables and whipping stuff around that they all ran out? Was that a very passive, oh, evil's being done to the poor. Oh, no. Just, oh, no, I won't resist. No, not at all. Was he passive when he got in a situation where there was a woman caught in adultery and the religious leaders of the day were ready to stone her? Was he passive when he got in their face and told them, she's the one righteous before God? Wow. To the powers that be, to actually this one right here, righteous before God. Crazy. Was he passive when to his own disciple, he confronted him and said, get behind me, Satan. Was that just whatever goes. Oh, Peter, you're doing this and that. Oh, well, I'm not going to resist. That wouldn't be a good Christian thing to do. What about when he's before Pilate? And he says to Pilate, you are right in saying I am a king. In fact, for this reason I was born. For this reason I came into the world to testify to the truth. And everyone on the side of truth listens to me. He's sitting with the guy who has the power to take his life. And the guy asks him a question, basically life or death. And Jesus just I don't want to get into it. I don't want to mess with it. He says, everyone on the side of truth listens to me, and I am the king. Wow. I would actually argue that Jesus' whole life can be summed up as a confrontation of the powers that be. It was not this passive, well, just live and let live. I don't really care. I can't really do anything. I'm just going to just watch it all happen and just take it. His whole life was this confrontation over and over with the status quo of the brokenness of the world and the power of the enemy, and he got in its face and said, that's not God's will. That's not how it's supposed to be. As he saw people who were sick, it says he was moved with compassion, this gut level, it's not supposed to be that way. And he got in his face and he released the will of God on earth and transformed the situation. But he was incredibly strong, active, confrontational in the right way in the right time. So I want to be careful that as we start this passage, we don't just lose ourselves in the misinterpretation, which is often done. Well, turn the other cheek, don't resist, which is a call to then just be passive and don't respond, don't do anything. Just let all sorts of bad things happen to you and everyone around you and don't resist, because that wouldn't be Christian. Jesus' life demonstrates that's not what he's saying. And so I want to dig in here a little bit and walk us through the text. It's kind of a part one in a way, because next week's passage, this one's just good enough that it needs to stand alone, but next week is really right on the heels of it. But what we have seen Jesus do over and over in the Sermon on the Mount is bring up a vicious cycle that needs to be broken. And then he will share a transforming practice that we, as followers of him, can walk in. It's our way of saying yes to God. It's our way of agreeing with heaven and saying, I believe you have a different way, God, and I'm going to say yes to it. And now again, this is not something we put on all our shoulders and do it on our own strength. It is through that soaking in our identity, but Jesus is absolutely calling us to new ways of responding in situations, new ways of acting and action. In the anger issue, in the lust issue, in the divorce issue, in the telling the truth issue, in integrity, all of that, he calls us to new ways of living. We call it the transforming practices. What are those things that God's Spirit's going to use in us and through us as we say yes to it that's going to transform normal, transform the status quo, transform the brokenness that we experience and the pain and the hurt in our life and in the world around us? And so I want to point out those two things, the vicious cycle and the transforming practice. In this text, I believe Jesus is going after the vicious cycle of vengeance. You've heard it said, an eye for an eye. But I say, don't resist. He is getting at this vicious cycle that in our world, the status quo, the normal, is that we respond to wrongs by doing a wrong. They hurt me, I'm going to hurt them. They sued me, I'm going to sue them. They got me, I'm going to get them. And we live in an eye for an eye world, where it's an escalation of conflict, an escalation of vengeance. You got me, I'm going to get you. There's a vicious cycle in there. Bad fruit gets produced. And we're going to look at how Jesus is saying, in this very kingdom-like, creative way, how do you stop the cycle? Who's going to stop the cycle from escalating? When does it end? As someone very famously said, an eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind. It's a wise statement. And I believe that's what Jesus is getting at here. When does it end? If vengeance is your status quo, if get them back in the way they got you is your status quo, your modus operandi, your normal way of responding, you're stuck in a vicious cycle of hurting others as they've hurt you. When does that end? When does that bear good fruit? So Jesus comes along in the context of a vicious cycle of vengeance. And he says, don't resist evil. And what I believe he's getting at is don't resist evil with more evil. That's how you're going to break the status quo. That's how you're going to stop the vicious cycle. Don't get sucked up into the vortex, if you will, of evil, evil, evil. You respond to evil. You did this to me. I'm doing this to you. You hurt me. I'm hurting you. And it's just this back and forth kind of, you got sucked into the vortex. And we all do. And we all get in there. And Jesus, I believe, that's the context where he's saying, don't resist that evil. But what we're going to see, as in his examples, is it's not the just lay down and die and whatever bad things people do to you, just who cares and just be abused. That's not his life, and that's not even what he goes on to say in the rest of the passage. I believe his transforming practice is resist evil without doing evil. We've got to find a new way. We don't resist evil with more evil. That's the status quo. Return in kind what was done to you. That's the status quo. And Jesus is saying, we've got to find a different way. There's a kingdom way. There's a different way when God's heart is flowing through us that resists evil, but without stepping in and becoming part of it. So let's watch how this happens. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, turn to him the other also. Though this is very famous, turn the other cheek, as we talked about, potentially very, very destructive if it just calls us to lay down and not respond and just take evil. Now, we think, a strong thing to do would be, well, punch him back. He punched you, you punch him back. Again, Jesus, I believe, is asking the question, when does that end? How'd that work out for you? Was it effective? Did it produce the long-term fruit you were hoping for? The context. Culturally, in that day, to be struck on the right hand was a very, very specific act that signified inferiority. So to be struck on the right hand, by the right hand, on the right cheek, as Jesus said, is a very specific cultural action that is reserved for slaves and children as a, back of the hand to the right cheek that was meant specifically from masters, if you will, to say, you are inferior to me. Know your place. Whoosh. So Jesus says, when someone treats you in that way of inferior, turn this one. What is he saying? Is he saying, well, just let them beat the heck out of you because that's just a Christian thing to do? No. He's saying, turn the other cheek when someone treats you with a superiority complex. Turn the other cheek and say, actually, no, I have dignity. By turning the other cheek, if the person's going to strike you again, they would have to strike you with their open hand. They can't strike you with the back of their hand anymore, their right hand, and they don't use their left because they use their left for other things, dirty things in that time. So it was the right hand that you're going to get it with. It would have to be an open hand, which causes them to think, oh, I'm not doing the inferiority thing anymore. Jesus is just trying to have this creative way of you resisting evil without becoming evil and saying when someone tries to treat you as inferior, don't take it. Turn your cheek and say, actually, hello, I'm not inferior to you. That's a different message than, oh, just sit there and take it because it's the Christian thing to do. It's this in this context, and I don't even, in some senses, know how do you apply that specifically to our context, but it's this, the message of it is there was that superiority thing in that day of a message of you are inferior to me. And Jesus is just saying, without fighting back with a punch and getting in that cycle, the vortex of vengeance, resist evil without becoming the evil. So turn, say, hello, actually, no, I'm not inferior to you. Very interesting. Goes on to then say, if anyone wants to sue you, take your coat, give your tunic as well. So two things of the day. This is he is deep in culture right now. And that's part of the problem of this passage is that we just ignore the culture of the time, the context of what he's talking, and just see how do I apply this to my life? And that can be dangerous. So he mentions a coat and a tunic. It was often very common that there was two garments of clothing that were worn. The tunic was the inner garment. The coat was the outer garment. Another very common situation of the times was in the courtroom, the rich and powerful landowner would try to find some little tic-tac way that the person, again, and we're going inferior, superior, superior, power, not power, oppressor, oppressed. That's the, these are the themes Jesus is bringing up. And he and what would often happen is the landowner, the boss, would find something one of his workers did that was, you know, the ticky-tacky, you didn't do this tiny little thing right, and take them to court and sue them for what would really be just a ridiculous, a frivolous suit, really unfounded, but the person with power can get it done. They can take advantage of those who, you know, relate to our day, can't afford the big, you know, big lawyer fees and get all those powerful lawyer, you know, legal teams on their side. So they would get taken advantage of. So often they would lose their coat, lose their tunic, and just really get stripped, get oppressed. So Jesus says, in that situation, what should you do? And again, there's a resistance here. Picture a courtroom. Let's say you're in the courtroom and you're watching, and there's a rich guy in there, and you know, whatever you want to imagine, this person meaning that they're just rich and really overly rich. They don't really need anything else. And there's this person in here who works for them, who's just getting by the skin of their teeth. Maybe all the clothes they have is this tunic and this coat, and this wrist merchant comes in and says, "Judge, they didn't do this little thing right on my property, so give me that. I want that guy's coat." How would you feel as an observer seeing this take place if the person who was being accused said, "You know what? You can have my coat. And you know what? All right, have my tunic too." The poor person would be standing in a courtroom naked, just given his last article of clothing to this, you know, this rich fat cat who doesn't need anything. What is the picture going on? Again, it's Jesus trying to creatively say, well, resist it, but do it in a creative way that you don't become part of the vicious cycle of evil. So, in a sense, how might that look to that rich fat cat? Maybe that would get his attention. That if you just, he asks for your coat and you give him both and you're left there naked with nothing, maybe that just maybe might open his eyes and say, wow, maybe I didn't really need to do that. Maybe I'm being a little excessive right now. It's meant to shock. This is meant to, an action that would shock the person into realizing that what they are doing is not right. But it's a way of doing it in that day, in that culture, without becoming part of the evil. It's a way of resisting. We're going to get into more. All right, last one. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go also the second mile. Again, extremely cultural context. This is referring to the current military occupation of Israel by the Romans, in which the Roman law stated that a soldier was permitted at any point, in any time, to enlist a Jewish bystander. You're sitting on the road, you're having your coffee, you're having your lunch, a Roman soldier walks by, they have the right, the law by Roman law, to at any point take a bystander and say, you are carrying my stuff 1 mile. So their whole pack, you know, the 60, 70, 80 pound, whatever, however, their whole pack, their sword, whatever they felt like you carrying, Roman law said you could be pointed to out of a crowd at any point in time. Whatever you're doing doesn't matter. You're coming with me. You're carrying my stuff 1 mile. And if you don't, well, you know, find yourself on a cross. It's the Roman law. So, again, oppressive situation. Is that right? Do you have the right just to come into my life and just say, all of a sudden, I have to do this for you? That's not right. Why don't we fight those Romans? Jesus said, resist evil, but without becoming part of the vicious cycle. So he says, if someone asks you to walk with them 1, blow their mind and walk with them 2. So you know what? Okay, I'll walk with you 1. And have a good attitude along the way and offer to take their stuff 2 miles. Because you know what? That just might turn that guy's world upside down. That just might shock him into, whoa, these Christians are different. This person that follows Jesus doesn't treat me like the normal person who the whole way is grumbling and fighting and cursing at me and wishing they had a sword so they could chop my head off. That person just went 2 miles with me. Whoa. Don't resist evil with more evil. Resist evil, not with evil means. Jesus is getting onto a massive issue. And this message here is mostly about don't do this. Next week, we're going to see do this. But this is plenty of stuff just for today. So I want to focus on that today. But no, there's an action coming. I'm not focusing a whole lot on that today. I want to focus on the don't do, because that's what Jesus focused on. He wants to break the vicious cycle that we are in our life, back then and now, of the eye for the eye. You got me? I'm getting you. He says, don't enter that game. Followers of me, don't resist evil with more evil. That's the status quo. It's not the kingdom of God. And he gives a few very cultural specific examples to show us how you can resist, but you don't play the game. Don't play the world's game. So he gave very upside down responses to normal. And that's what I want to challenge us to think of, because these are so very culturally specific. I think that for us, we have to wrestle with, in our situations, in our culture, when evil is done to us, what's the upside down thing we can do? Well, we'll get more to that next week, but today the focus is that as followers of Jesus, we would have in our heads that we will not resist evil with more evil. We will practice choosing to respond differently than the status quo when wrong is done to us. That's what Jesus is trying to get at. Can we respond differently than vengeance when wrong is done to us? Jesus is saying we can. Jesus is saying we should. Jesus is saying in his strength, that's what his followers will do, and release more of the kingdom, God's will, into whatever context we are at. I want to give us one example of that, and we'll close. One of my favorite just heroes of the faith, Dr. Martin Luther King, I think he got this better than most we've ever seen. He lived this out in our country, and I believe through that released a work of God's kingdom. This guy faced death threats. He was arrested almost 30 times. His house was bombed. He was beaten multiple times. He was stabbed. He was put in solitary confinement. The FBI was against him, had all his phone tapped, thought he was a communist. He was attacked by police dogs. He was shot with fire hoses. And through the whole thing, he's so fascinating to me, because I feel like he's one of the modern day examples of someone who got this message of Jesus and lived it out and wrestled with it. I mean, his own house was bombed. He's got kids. I mean, if there's a time to just respond in kind, take up arms and fight back with violence, get vengeance. Right after his house was bombed, he met with his guards and he refused to allow them to carry guns. His message, we're not going to get sucked up into the cycle, into the vortex. I want to read a quote here where he talks about it. He says that Jesus is a practical realist, meaning that when he gives these commands in the Sermon on the Mount, he's not joking. They're not these philosophical, religious, abstract things we're supposed to just keep somewhere in our mind. This is truly a way to live your life that's different than the status quo. And he goes on to say, one of those things, returning hate for hate. And this is an expounding of his reflections on the Sermon on the Mount, which is right where we're at right now. The love of enemies passage, which we're going to see next week. Incredible passage. His reflections are on this passage and that passage are this. Returning hate for hate multiplies hate. Adding a deeper darkness to a night already devoid of stars. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. Hate multiplies hate. Violence multiplies violence in a descending spiral of destruction. Just jumping down a little bit, he goes, last sentence. The chain reaction of evil, hate begetting hate, war producing more wars, must be broken or we shall be plunged into the dark abyss of annihilation. There's a couple of key phrases in there. He talks about the chain reaction, this descending spiral of destruction. And I'm not saying everything he said in every context about all things are right, but there's something in there, in that quote, that I believe has captured the heart of Jesus. That's what Jesus is getting at here. There is a descending spiral of destruction. Our language we've been putting on it, a vicious cycle that we get wrapped up when we're living in our own strength, when we're living for our own agenda, for our own will, in our own capacity, we all get sucked into that vortex of vengeance and want to return evil with evil. And Jesus is just saying, don't do that. Make it a point, a commitment in your heart that you will practice something differently. You will not resist evil with more evil. The chain reaction must be broken, or we will be plunged into a dark abyss. He's just saying it produces bad fruit. And if we all get caught up in the vortex that continues to just produce more and more hate and wars and pain and suffering, when does it stop? What stops the chain reaction? And I believe that's the powerful question for us that Jesus is going to ask. He's asking his followers, who's going to stop it? Who's going to stop the cycle of vengeance? And I believe that's where he's calling us to be those people that would say yes to him and say, yes, Lord, me. I will, to the extent of my influence in my personal relationships, in my family, at work, at school, I will make a choice ahead of time. I will be one that stops the cycle, that stops the chain. I think this goes across the spectrum of relationships. I ask my kids this because you see the vortex. You can see it on so many levels of society. Just that spinning cycle, just descending into just more and more negative fruit. Whether it's on a massive nation-by-nation scale or whether it's in your own living room with two kids, you can see what happens when I choose to respond with the negativity or the evil that's been done to me. And I ask my kids, and they're arguing, and you know the story, but think about it for your life, your family, your work. What's going on, guys? They're like, wah! And then it's like, oh, he did it. Well, he did it. He did it. And you know what? The probably truth is, you're probably both right. You probably both wronged each other. Who's going to stop the cycle? Because if I try to get down here and parse it out into this little thing happened here and this little and this offense and this wrong and this that, we'll be here all day. And what we're probably going to end up with is you were both imperfect. That's almost always the case. So put that in your own life. You're almost always imperfect. So who's going to stop the cycle? That's the question. And that's what Jesus gets at. We're going to even see him get more direct on it, where he talks about don't judge others, take the plank out of your own eye. He says, stop looking around for everybody else and all their problems. Who's going to stop the cycle? Me. I can't control you. You can't control me. You can't control anyone else. You can't control anyone else's responses except you. So Jesus is saying, who's going to stop the cycle? Are you going to be the one that makes the choice to be the peacemaker and stop the cycle? How do we do this? And I just said it. We mentioned the Beatitudes as our identity, as the power source by which we can live this new way, make these kind of decisions. Because these are hard things. When I've been wronged, I don't want to make the choice to stop the cycle. I want to get you back. But if we remember the Beatitudes, and Jesus talked about be merciful, and we looked into that, as you have been shown mercy. Whoa, how have I been shown mercy? Jesus shares that parable. Well, because you've built up 100 million days wages of debt with God. And your friends may have 100 days wages of debt with you. But God, because of what Jesus did on the cross, showed mercy to your 100 million days wages. So if you soak in that reality, that 100 days wages that your friend owes you doesn't seem such a big deal anymore. So this is where we learn to soak, or peacemaker. That God went to great lengths to reconcile us to himself. He went through hell in order that we might be at peace with him. So do you think that matters to God? Oh, it matters to God. And God went to that length for us. So between the undeserved mercy and the peacemaking power that he went to us to reconcile him to himself, if we soak in that, if that becomes real, if that becomes an experience, that will empower us to be the kind of people that can make the decision that says, yes, Lord, I will go into situations ahead of time, choosing that I will not resist vengeance with more vengeance. I won't enter the game. I won't do it. Now, what you do is look at the next week that's coming. But for this week, we have to be a people that first will make that choice to step out and say, not going to go there. And by doing that, Jesus is giving us another transforming practice that will, empowered by his Spirit, shift our life. It will transform, first and foremost, you, and one by one, the relationships around you, your circle of influence. And so the challenge is for you to go and think, what are the contexts in my life where I am tempted or have just jumped full force in to respond vengeance with more vengeance and continue the vicious cycle that just bears more and more negative fruit? Is it work? Is it your spouse? Is it your kids? Is it school? Is it some friendships? Whatever it may be. Look in those and say, Holy Spirit, show me those areas so that then I can soak in you, soak in my identity and who you are, your mercy, your reconciling peace, and then make that choice ahead of time. I'm going to be a person as a follower of Jesus that lives out this transforming practice and says, nope, I'm not going.
For more podcasts and updates, go to weareelevation.com. Also, follow us on Twitter at weareelevation and on Facebook, facebook.com/weareelevation.